Welcome back to The Empowered Homeowner. I am Beth Allen, your host, and I am a DIY expert. I'm a contractor and an educator, and I love to bring you topics that are just practical and informative about managing your home. After all, it's the biggest investment of your life. So today, I'm very happy to have a friend in the house, Sharon Loudenbach, who is... She's a realtor, and she is a community advocate, and she is also involved with domestic violence awareness, and I just love that, and it's part of how we got connected.
That's right.
So I'm just so excited that Sharon's here, and we get to talk real estate, because it's a confusing new scene. So tell us a little bit about your background and what kind of real estate moves you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for having
me on.
Happy
you're here.
Yeah, yeah. This is my second career. As a younger adult, I joined a family business, a local retailer in the area, and I ran the business with my family until almost 11 years ago. It was called Robinson Luggage, and we closed the business, unfortunately. And luckily, I had actually gotten my real estate license. I sort of saw the writing on the wall of brick and mortar retail. And I kind of snuck away and hid it and got my real estate license. So when I ended up looking for a new career, because I was not ready to stop working, I decided to sell residential real estate. So I have been...
And that's a tough field. That is a tough field to be in. There's a lot of competition.
There's a tremendous amount. It's so funny. So when I was making the decision... So many people are going, why are you deciding? There's so much competition. And I said, anything that's good that you can enjoy and make money in is going to have competition. So I wasn't afraid of that. That was never my concern.
Yeah. You are not afraid of a lot.
believe me, there's still, I may put on a good front, but that didn't concern me really. So, you know, I live in Eastern Montgomery County. I live out in White Marsh Township, and I just started with Keller Williams Real Estate and went through their training program, and I was new agent of the year and yada yada. And, you know, now I'm with my third brokerage. I'm with Compass, and I have an office in Chestnut Hill, and I've been enjoying the ups and downs of the business. Ah, boy, we had a lot of ups through. When I first started in the industry, we were a pretty balanced market.
And the last 5 years?
It went from like learning how to negotiate and learning how to write offers and learning on both sides, working with buyers and sellers. And then COVID hit and just all hell broke loose. And you could sell ice to an Eskimo. And then almost 3 years ago, or I guess two years ago, the bottom just dropped out. The interest rates started hopping at crazy percentage points. And we're in a market right now that we're just waiting to see.
Waiting to see when we can all shop for houses again. You know,
it's happening.
And afford them.
It's happening. So the interest rates are coming down very slowly. I mean, cautiously is better. Nobody wants just big changes, and fast changes are not good in any industry, especially in real estate, which is so, you know, connected. So we don't want big changes. We would like the interest rates to come down, and the revolution of sellers putting their house on the market again and talking to me about what that means and planning it. So that's what I'm hoping for is coming. I'm seeing it coming. So I just got a buyer under contract yesterday, first-time home buyer. It was a small multiple offer situation. She didn't have to sell her first child to make it happen, and we are thrilled. So I'm definitely starting to see some changes.
That's awesome. I know one of the areas that you like to work in is seniors, and that's near and dear to me, is working with seniors. So what draws you to work with that population?
I have fallen in love with I'm going to give it a bigger umbrella. I love working with sellers and planning. There's a major planning process involved. And a lot of sellers are going to be seniors. So you say seniors, I say downsizers.
So
we have a different language that we discovered yesterday.
They can be the same or they can be different, because you do have people who might be in their, you know, 40s that are like, oh my gosh, I this is too much house. I'm done. I don't want to manage all of this. I need to downsize. I want that condo that somebody takes care of things.
Oh, yeah. And there's such a great time and place for that. And I actually have this downsizing guide that I brought you a copy of it today that somehow I can share it with you. One of the whole keys of talking to people about downsizing or getting rid of the family home, whatever stage of whatever age you are, is trying to figure out what that next stage looks like. Because I've actually sat at the table with couples that invited me to their home saying, Sharon, we want to sell the family house, blah, 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 blah. And then I said, well, what does that look like? Where are you going? Are you going to a condo? Are you going in the city? Are you going to a smaller house? And they had completely polar opposites. And I was like, all right, this is exactly what we need to talk about. Because believe it or not, a lot of couples don't see eye to eye on that. And it has to be, there's really a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
A lot of discussion.
It's great that you want to sell, but where are you going?
That's really what's been holding up real estate these days, is because where are you going is the question, because people of our generation, empty nesters, becoming seniors, know that they don't want to take care of the home anymore. You know, like many of your
clients. Not like me, who loves to fix things.
They don't want to fix things. Yeah. They don't want to deal with it. The house is 40 or 60 years old. They've already replaced the kitchen once. They don't want to do it again. There's all these things. But what does that mean? You know, and where is it available? Are you willing to move? You live in a community that's not too far from the city. You're 15 miles from the city. Do you want to go in? Do you want to go out? Are there housing options, what you have in mind, actually available? That I'm running into that constantly right now.
What seems to be what people are looking for, mm-hmm. that's in shortage?
Well, shortage may not be the right word. It may be that these areas are not conducive to have that type of housing. So there are a lot of people that want city and walking and commuting living, so the borough living. But at our age, we still want a garage. Right. We don't want, like a lot of people think that they want to live in Ambler or they want to live in Conshohocken. They want to live in these borough areas or even downtown, Manayunk, whatever. But the newer construction that they're going to want is vertical living. It's four floors.
Right. And at 40 or 50... That's
60.
Not appealing. Or 60. Yeah,
not
that
appealing.
Is not appealing, is to have more steps.
That's all there is.
Yeah.
So I sort of have a laundry list of people that are like, oh, Sharon, when they build that double-wide house in Conshohocken with a two-car garage and the master on the first floor, you know, in an HOA because you don't want to take care of anything, you're like, look around. That would be probably a $1.5 to $2 million house because of the land value. And no builders are doing that. They're building these quick flips at $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 to the young folk.
Yeah. So you mean we can't find a four-bedroom rancher in the heart of Center City?
Exactly.
And that's what you would want, right? To be able to have the space without the steps,
yeah.
And have all the action.
So, I mean, here's an option. I have very dear friends moving their winter home to Arizona.
Interesting.
Because that's where Toll builds neighborhoods. We're not talking neighborhoods like around here. We're not talking developments. We're talking 100-acre neighborhoods with shopping plazas.
Right.
And one-floor living. Right. And a little postage stamp property, because that's all you want.
Well, it's like the Villages in Florida. That's why it's so popular, is because the lifestyle is
yeah.
so appealing.
So basically
people.
Where they're buying is basically the Villages, but in Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sharon, we're going to take a moment to pause. I want to hear from, if we're talking about moving or selling or building, let's hear a word from LBK. With LBK Design Build, you work with a family-owned business with over 10 years of experience servicing the Bucks and Montgomery County areas. They are dedicated to making every client feel like you are the only client. With one expert team, your space is crafted with care and tailored to your style and budget. Relax and enjoy your custom-designed space, knowing your home will be treated like it is their own. Call them at 215-675-5000 for your free estimate. With LBK, dream it, build it, love it. So, Sharon, as part of this downsizing, do you see more people going from the big house to 55 plus, or do you see them going right to senior living? What do you see as, at least in our Philly burbs, what are we seeing?
I've seen both. I mean, I work, probably because of my age and demographic, I'm definitely seeing more people just going to either 55 and older, or not even going there, just going to a townhouse community, just where they don't have to really worry about the home, and it's so new that very few things happen to it. But also, I mean, I help my parents and my parents' friends. So I have also helped people going to CCRCs or actual nursing home facilities.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, I struggle with the idea of the 55-plus community. I get that.
The independent 55-plus, right?
Yeah, I struggle with that because, you know, you might be selling your home for $800, $900, mm-hmm. and then these communities are $700 mm-hmm. to get it, your foot in the door. And, yes, they mow the lawn, they shovel the snow, but there's still two or three stories. You still have the interior maintenance that's your responsibility. And for me, I'm like, I'd rather stay put mm-hmm. where I'm at and just bring in services.
Until
that next step.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole big thing about the downsizing is really trying to figure out what all this means. So many people, the thought of downsizing in their head is about capturing some money, selling the family house at $800 and thinking that they can go somewhere for $500, putting the money in the bank for retirement. That's kind of not happening right now.
Not around here.
It's really not.
Yeah.
That's why this friend of mine is like, we're going to go to Arizona because they can sell Philadelphia suburbs and do that. But it's not what's happening every day at all around here. So, you know, the old thought 20 years ago of downsizing and pocketing that money and investing that money for your future and your health needs is kind of not there. And I know you're not a financial advisor, but it is part of the conversation. It is absolutely part of that
conversation. Absolutely, and it has to be. I mean, I watched my my aunt and uncle, they sold their house in Warminster, Bucks County, and then moved to Delaware. And the mm-hmm. value that they got in Delaware, but their community, as beautiful it is, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
It's in
the middle of nowhere. So, you know, it's location, location, location. And how do you balance what you need in terms of location? What does your desired lifestyle look like?
Exactly.
And that's what you have to narrow down to primarily.
And I have a client who sold their very beautiful family home. They raised the kids. The kids are doing great. They decided to sell the suburban home, rent in a fabulous part of Philadelphia, and buy at the shore. So they're doing, like, you know, dual ownership, or one rental, one ownership at the shore. That was the lifestyle that they want. And those people sometimes, if it's a big lifestyle change, they're willing to not necessarily recap the money off of the house. They're willing to just kind of go even Steven and do a trade because they want the lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand that. But those are the kinds of things as an agent, you have to mm-hmm. peel back that onion and understand where they're coming from so that you're able to give them what they need. You know, it's just like when I've done design work with people and you go in and they're like, oh, well, I want this, like for curtains or window mm-hmm. treatments. And they're like, oh, well, I want, you know, shades that do this. And you're like, well, what's the point of that? Is it light filtration? Mm-hmm. Is it privacy? Is it airflow? You know, you have to peel back at what is at the core of what you do. How do you help your clients kind of
Well, the get plan. I keep saying plan. So we have to sit down and have a discussion because, again, people want to move to Philly and they think they're going to have a garage and, like, not be on the third floor for the master bedroom, and it's not going to be a very old house with old plumbing. So you need to have time, and I think my version of the word plan is giving me time to walk them through the process. we may take months discovering what this is, and you have to visit. You know, when you have clients, and they may not really be clients, they may just be buyers that are not actually really buyers, that say that these are things that they want, but they don't want to spend the time on the road looking. You have to get in the house. Right. You don't really know what they look like. They may have a totally different idea of what's actually behind that front door.
Yeah. Well, I have to joke, you know, my husband and I would joke that on vacation sometime, we're going to rent a Mustang, right? Because it'd be fun to rent a Mustang on vacation. Well, we did that one time.
Hated the Mustang.
And hated it because your butt is on the ground and you can't, you know, we're 50 plus and it's like, well, maybe this would have been fun at 25, but now it's like dragging your rear end out of a hole, you know, with the doors that are ginormous and wide. So, yeah. You know, you have to, like you said, kick the tires. You got to get in the car and go to the open houses and see.
Or go with your agent. The agent that wants to take you. Some agents may just say go, but right. I want to take them because I want to see their response. I want to take them to three houses and then sit down and say pluses and minuses of each. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from this time out with me? Are you two even seeing the same way? Did one of you flip and the other one flop?
Yeah.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. That's a great way to do it. One of my mentors said to me years ago, when you're, you know, facing a decision and not sure where you want to go, you have your hell yes, hell no, and maybe column. And I could see that for house shopping as well.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, yes, this is in my, you know, absolute category. And this is that maybe
there's a couple more other. There's probably hell yes, hell no, neutral, and somewhere in between all of those. And until we get them like really seeing it, they don't even know. So you got to go out. You got to take the time.
Yeah. Because as beautiful as those pictures are, they're all staged. They're staged photos.
That's what we do for a living. Yes. Well, most of us.
Yeah. Everything looks wider, bigger, grander, brighter, cleaner, fresher, newer.
And actually the opposite too, Beth. Mm-hmm. Got to say, I've been in places that we walked in and we're like, this looks so much better than the pictures.
Wow.
So it goes both ways. It really does, which makes it really complicated. As agents, we can't just say, oh, you know, it's probably not going to look that good. Because sometimes you walk in, it looks better.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what a happy surprise that is.
Yeah. Oh, you're like, oh my God, it actually, the agent didn't fully light this room as well as it really is lit. Or just the agent really didn't know to move that chair out of the way because it doesn't belong there. And you move it and it just changes the whole vision of the space.
Yeah. How do you help prospects manage walking into spaces that have the old lady furniture, that have the wallpaper, that have the aging appliances? How do you help them get past that? I'm a visionary type of person, so I can walk in and I'm past the avocado, whatever, and the fuzzy, you know, flocked. Remember the flocked wallpaper of the 70s? Oh my gosh, we had yellow and black.
There's a lot.
It's still out there. But how do you help them get past that block of, oh my gosh, I can't live here?
Here's what, to be brutally honest, I can see past certain things. I can't see past as much as some of my clients can see past.
Okay.
It's a very individual eye. It's really kind of interesting because sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm the stager. I know, blah, blah, blah. And there's sometimes I go in and I'm like, and the client's like, I see vision. I have one of my best friends bought a house in Winmore. I did not see it. You should see what she's doing to this house. Mm-hmm. And you have to have the right client. Like, it's definitely also a process with people, especially younger people. Somebody buying their second home tends to understand whether they are willing to do or not do work, right? Because they've sort of lived there. A younger person, they all think that what they want is what they see on HGTV, gray.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
But then sometimes you get them into it because they don't have necessarily the budget for it. And especially in this super competitive market that we've been in for 5 years, you have to get them to say, okay, let's look at the bones.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, wallpaper's a pain in the ass to get to, whatever. Let's look at the bones. And if the seller has kept the house intact.
Yes. So it's maintenance, it's location, and it's the bones, because everything else is changeable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and some changes are minor. Like if you go into a house and you just need new carpet and paint, like that's a no-brainer. That's a week, right? If you start talking about a client about a completely brand new kitchen, blah, 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 you're obviously in a different discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's no different than when I work with sellers. I'm always talking about floors and walls, floors and walls. This is what clients, buyers need to see and check off their head that it's done and it's not a big deal. Floors and walls.
Yeah. My in-laws are trying to sell a home in Florida mm-hmm. right now. And, you know, it's a beautiful community, 55 plus. And, you know, they're snowbirds. So they've been there 15 years, but it's only been lived in 7, basically. Yeah. And again, beautiful community. There's a couple homes on the market. And the feedback has been, we don't like the carpet. The carpet is cream colored. It looks immaculate. But
they don't want carpet.
They don't want carpet. They want hard surface flooring. And my poor father-in-law, I love him to death. He says to me, do you think that luxury vinyl flooring you have in the basement, something I could do myself down there? And I went, no. I'm like, no, you cannot do that. It's just too physically exhausting. Mm. But I also said, Dad, you could go pick out a, you know.
And the next person's going to hate it.
Right. You could pick out a brown tone and somebody wants a gray tone. And so.
Well, so I'm going to give you a suggestion.
How do you give that?
Just tell him to recommend he talks to his agent about putting in a seller assist for the
That's
cost of the
That's what we
flooring.
Talked, yeah.
Because you don't want him to put junk in there. Like, you don't want him to put the vinyl that you have in your basement on his main floor,
right?
Because it's a whatever value, nice community. So instead of making the poor choice, I would be very specific about putting a credit in there for the buyer to do the flooring once they move in.
Yes, and that's what we discussed, and he's approaching his agent about down there. Because, exactly, you could rip out your kitchen and you put in what you think is nice, mm-hmm. and the buyer walks in and goes, oh, I don't like this kitchen. And you're like, I just did it.
So, and I have a lot of buyers that will say to me, I'd rather have a kitchen that's not done because I'd rather not pay them the $50,000 that they think that kitchen is worth and me not like it and have to put another $20,000 in.
Right.
So sometimes I don't really recommend that my clients do major projects before listing their house. Like a kitchen or a bathroom.
So don't renovate to sell.
Not a big renovation. No. I mean, I'm here to talk to you about exactly the things I will do. We will look at flooring. We will look at walls. We will look at furniture placement, decluttering, all those other things, getting your things out in your garage, opening up the spaces and placing things correctly. But very, 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 one time I did a kitchen, and it was a real small kitchen in a townhouse. And I had to because there was like, it was tenant occupied. So the tenant had destroyed the kitchen. And we did the kitchen for like $6,000. But otherwise, I've never done a kitchen for to sell a house.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's about making it clean and fresh, mm-hmm. you know, and that's paint.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. When
we have great colors for paint.
Oh my gosh. When we sold my mom's house, you know, I flipped it. You know, it took me 7 or 8 months to flip it. And I literally spent $7,000. It was a lot of sweat equity.
That's a lot of sweat equity.
It was a lot of sweat equity, but it was worth it because we had a flipper that wanted to give us $100,000 for the house.
Mm-hmm.
And after 7 months, 8 months, and $7,000, I sold it for $270,000.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, that's not a typical.
You know what I mean? It's not a typical story. But, you know, I did change the flooring in the family room.
Yeah.
I painted the cabinets, mm-hmm. knowing that if I were to buy this house, I'd want to blow out the back and really build in. But I made it
brighter, probably.
Brighter, fresh. Well, it went from dark oak or dark mm-hmm. walnut cabinets to fresh white.
Yeah.
And I put in new formica. So it was enough to make it palatable that a young couple walked in and went, oh, this is cute. It may not be long term, but it wasn't.
And it's clean. It's clean and fine until we do it.
Yes.
Clean and fine until we do it.
Until we make it ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important selling point, is that it doesn't have to be perfect and grand.
Yeah, it
has to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
that you don't walk in and go, oh, yeah, no way, and walk out.
Yeah, no way. Oh, God, we should go into the stories I have of when I walk into houses.
What are a couple of the no way things you've seen?
The most recent, I don't know if no way would be the thing, but the guy had like a beer mug with like a, like what looked like a handgun as the handle on his counter.
On what?
Like on a beer mug.
On the beer mug.
It was like the handle was like a handgun. And I like literally picked it up and put it in front of my client and I was like, that's interesting.
Maybe we want to put that in the cabinet.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. So that was one. I mean, of course, you see animal traps, you know, out in the open. You know, and you're like,
Yeah, we don't want to let anyone know we have a mouse problem.
We want to hide that.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't understand how people leave the house with the bed unmade and cobwebs.
I leave my bed unmade, but not if I'm having company.
Not for a showing.
Not
for a showing. I'm really clear to my clients when, you know, they're listing their house. Typically, the market's been so good and fast, I tell my clients to get lost for a couple days because there's so many showings in such a short period of time. But if that doesn't happen, I read them the Riot Act and give them the list of things that have to be done every morning.
Yeah. One of my pet peeves in going into, even just as somebody I know, going into their house is seeing the plunger in the corner of the bathroom.
Oh, I'm so guilty for that. That's exactly where it is because it's practical. Oh,
see, for me, it just grosses me out. Like we all, it's not art, right? It's not art. We all know where it's been. We all know what it did. You use it, you
disinfect it. Where do you keep yours? In the closet?
I keep it in a grocery bag, you know, plastic grocery bag, either tucked under the sink cabinet or in the hall closet. Or a linen closet. But again, it's not art.
You're going to make me a better person. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, hi. It is.
Hide that plunger. It's gross.
I agree with you. No, I don't like them out of showings, believe me.
Well, exactly. Because that also says, oh, we have plumbing issues. That says,
or an active child.
Our toilet clogs often enough for me to leave this out.
Yeah, sure.
So hide that puppy. You know, unless you're having Uncle Buck come for Thanksgiving and, you know, he always clogs your toilets, you know.
Then you definitely want to keep it nearby so you don't have to save
him. Exactly. It saves a little bit of embarrassment, you know, that you don't have to do that. So, well, we're going to take another break, Sharon. And I want to hear from our nonprofit partner, Laurel House. As much as we talk about homes and you know, buying and having options. There are so many women in Montgomery County who are facing a lot of challenges with domestic violence. So we want to give them a shout out.
Since 1980, Laurel House has been a lifeline for domestic violence survivors in Montgomery County, offering a safe shelter, a 24/7 hotline, trauma counseling, relationship education for teens, court accompaniment, and medical advocacy. But there's more work to do. Together, we can end domestic violence and help families rebuild their lives, whether it's volunteering at their thrift shops, assisting with childcare, or becoming a text line responder. Your time can make a real impact. With training and support, you can become an advocate for survivors in our community. To learn more about volunteering, donating, or simply offering your support, visit laurelhouse.org. Or call 610-277-1860. Every action counts. Together, we can make a difference.
So, in the theme of planning, because that's you know very important to you and helping people move through this decision to downsize or move, what is a timeline that you suggest? How do you kind of guide people to begin the process? If somebody says, you know, I want to be out of my house, you know, by the end of next year, how do you roll that out for people?
Okay. So clearly everybody's timeline is different and everybody's availability to actually do the work that needs to be done in their house to get it ready is different. And, you know, some people will drag it out because it's painful and others find a lot of joy in doing it once they have a reason to move. So it's by person. So I would say the majority of people, I'm going to have a very simple discussion with them about starting now. Like, why wait? Start now. We all have closets and closets and or basements or garages or spaces, storage spaces to really start going through. One, it's so funny, one little bit of advice that I give everybody that's selling that most people don't think about is most people think about, oh, I need to get a pod or, oh, I need to get a storage unit. And my experience is most people don't. Most of us have either a garage mm-hmm. or like a shed or even a basement that you can use for your storage and move things to. I say to people, as long as it is neatly piled, it can even go in the basement or the garage. I say to people, you're already spending however much a month on your mortgage. You pay for this garage every single month. Why do you need to pay for a storage unit? That is your storage unit. For the next 6 months, you're not going to park inside your garage. You're going to park outside your garage, and you are going to neatly stack in bins everything that you're trying to take out of your house. And obviously, then there's organization in terms of what you're taking with you, what you're right. donating, what you're gifting. Right. There are great companies to help with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I help with staging free of charge. I don't help with...
The packing decluttering. Up and decluttering. And,
could you imagine? Yeah. I do not do that free of charge. I don't even do it for myself very well.
Yeah. See, I always find this storage unit obsession. And it is. It's like every time you turn around, there's like a new storage unit that's popping up. And
what are people keeping in those things?
Well, how often are you actually going over that storage unit to actually get that thing? Like if it's
Nobody
so
does.
Out of touch, then do you really need it in the first place? And I would say... Unlikely.
Yeah. No. Some people do have big moves. Like I had a client recently that moved from the West Coast with two children in school in a short period of time. They were in a rental for 4 weeks of it. So that person had to do like the pod, move
oh,
the
absolutely.
Pod.
Yeah.
Like she was super organized and, you know, went through that process. But most people that are going to say, oh, I'm just going to put some things in storage, they never go back to
them. They don't go back to there. No. You wonder what's dying over that
don't
storage
Don't you remember
unit?
Those, there was a TV show, not Storage Wars. Maybe it was Storage Wars.
Yeah, it was
Wars.
Something like that,
yeah.
where they would just open up and see what did people have in their bins.
Well, because they were left for 10 years.
Yes. And people don't let your children inherit that storage unit. You didn't want that stuff near you for a reason, and neither do your kids. So don't
for sure.
leave that for them.
That is great. Maybe once in a blue moon, there could be an amazing secret kept secret in there. But
yeah, most of us aren't getting on Antique Roadshow.
Yeah, no.
With a find.
Yeah, use your own space as storage. I mean, literally, I had somebody in a row home in town. She didn't have anything exterior of the house. I said, clean your basement, get to the bottom, and then start cleanly stacking. The new buyers walked down the steps. They knew what that was for because it was stacked properly. It wasn't a bundle just thrown and stuff all over. They knew exactly what it was for. Nobody cared.
Right. And I think that is a big key. If your stuff mm-hmm. is neatly arranged mm-hmm. and organized, then your prospects can see that and
it's
go,
used. It has a purpose.
Oh, wow. Look at all these cubbies. Like, oh, my gosh, this would be great for me to put my stuff. But if it is a total... pile of chaos.
Then, or all over the place.
Yeah. The people go in and go, oh my God, there's just, nowhere to keep anything.
Right.
So it's all about being organized, not so much how much you have.
The whole organization thing in today's world, which I'm sure you help clients with a ton, is amazing because it's true. You walk into people's homes and as soon as you see like an IKEA, one of those organizer things, whether it's in the basement or the at wherever it is, it shows that you're trying to be an organized family.
Yes.
And it really does help. Like, it's something in the brain that goes, oh, they're trying to keep up on the house.
Right. And it does exactly say to that prospective buyer, these are people who care about this property. Mm-hmm. They respect the property. They valued this property. And I can value it too because they've had a relationship with the house, and that's important to do.
It is hugely important. I mean, I have for years dealt with young couples that want to buy a house that they can't necessarily afford what it looks like on HGTV. And I have a lot of mommy moments because of my age with my clients. And I talk about the bones mm-hmm. a lot. And if it shows that the bathtub has been cleaned for the 40 years it's been standing. Mm-hmm. And the caulk has been redone. And the this and the that. It means a tremendous amount to the buyer.
Yeah.
It puts them over the edge of saying, maybe I can paint the cabinets. That's okay. This house was cared for. And there is a huge monetary value to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That regular maintenance mm-hmm. is so important. To be able to show to a prospect, we have maintenance records. Mm-hmm. You know, we've kept up with the HVAC. Things are labeled. You know, we have on the side of our water heater is the instruction manual in a Ziploc bag. Mm-hmm. Like all of those little things say, I cared about this house.
And I hired the professionals that also cared about it because they actually put it on the side of the water heater.
Exactly. Like if you're going to buy a car, do you want to buy the car that has no maintenance record mm-hmm. or the car that has a detailed maintenance record? Because that shows that it was cared for.
Cared for.
And that means everything, especially this is the biggest investment of mm-hmm. your life for what, 99%
of the world? I have to tell you, probably the two homes that my buyers ended up being least satisfied with their purchase were both flips.
Interesting.
They looked sparkly. They had a white kitchen. Whatever the other reasons, the carpet was gray. And both of those two clients were the most disappointed with their purchase.
Yeah. Lipstick on a pig?
Lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
I'll very frequently try to talk my clients out of buying flips.
Yeah, exactly. And I understand that. Oh, trust me, there's a little bit of myself that is like, oh, how did that young couple make out with mama's home? But they knew from the inspection that there were electrical issues that needed to be dealt with. They knew that there was a potential problem with the plumbing long term because it still had galvanized steel drains. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, all of these things were spelled out on the inspection list
and disclosure. Yeah,
and then the disclosure. But still, in my gut, I'm like, oh boy, I hope they weren't hit with those big ticket things too soon. But you know, I wasn't hiding anything.
I mean, sometimes it's water intrusion that flippers. I'm talking corporate flippers. I'm not necessarily
talking
about my friend Beth Allen.
Yes.
But these people that flip 20 houses a year, they're covering up the water issues.
Right.
Totally covering them up.
Yes. But they may not have even fully known what the issues were when they bought it. So buying it from someone who's lived in it
maybe
for 40 years
yes.
and can tell you all the stories of the house and tell you the problems, there's a benefit to that.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, flippers have gotten good enough to cover it up as well.
Oh, I can imagine.
To purposefully cover it up. So when you walk in the basement of an 80-year-old house and you see like a patch of new, you know, wall or flooring or whatever cement on the floor and you're like, only that part was just redone. There could be a reason.
Right, right. And to look for those things. Again, it's about being educated.
And hire an agent that's going to educate you
yeah.
and walk through it with you.
So we were talking about having people have an eye about buying a house. Have you ever had buyers that have wanted a designer to come with?
Yes.
Okay.
I've done that too, yeah. Yeah, the people that are looking to do a massive project, it really is a good idea to have a designer come with you.
Okay.
In a semi-balanced market, there's time for it. In a crazy market that we had for 2-3 years, that was literally insane. Like, it was really hard to get those people in. Mm. But no, I've definitely had circumstances where the designer has come because they really want to look at which walls can be taken down and, you know, what sort of support beams need to be put in and things like that. Or, you know, I've had architects come to look at the lay of the land and things like that.
Yeah, so maybe you know the house generally has good bones. Mm-hmm. It's the location, all mm-hmm. of that. And then you want to see how do you take that further. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a higher end client.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this isn't the average person.
It's not the average person that's, you know, happy with a really nice roof over their head and the American dream. It's really the person that's pushing the paper that is looking for, it's definitely not their first home. You know, they've had things in their first home that didn't satisfy them. So they're taking it to the next level.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it. So want to chat a little bit about the changes in the real estate world.
Yeah.
There have been a bunch of new regulations in terms of commissions and contracts. Can you, you know, to start with the contracts, you know, I want to go look at a house. How has that game changed?
Okay, I got to back up just 1 second. What happened was there's, you know, this big settlement, National Association of Realtors settlements with all the brokers around the country. The crux of the working change in practice is that because there was so much confusion and misinformation or misunderstanding what was going on. The crux of it is that our buyers need to know what us buyers' agents are making. Okay. That's the crux of the whole thing. Mm. So before July, the listing agent would tell me, the listing agent would get the contract with the seller. The listing agent would tell me privately what the seller was willing to pay me. And I was basically telling the buyer, don't worry, the seller is paying me. You know, unless once in a blue moon that didn't happen. That was like once in 100 sales. But typically that's what happened. The buyer never had to know what I was making as their agent. That's what changed. The buyer now has to be informed before they even go into the house what the seller is or isn't agreed to pay their buyer's agent. And if, as the buyer's agent, you're not being paid by the seller, me as the buyer's agent get to decide whether I'm going to accept no payment for the job to work for nothing, which none of us are going to do.
Right.
Or if we're going to talk to the buyer about paying us directly, or what most of us are doing is just going to turn it back around with the offer. Let's say the client likes it. We're going to turn it around with the offer and say, Mr. Seller, my client wants this house. We're going to pay you this, but you need to pay me this. And it's got to be paid one way or another, or my buyer isn't going to buy the house.
Wow.
Is that clear enough?
No. Oh, my gosh. I feel like I watched a chess game. And
I know, because I'm saying buyer,
around.
Seller, buyer, seller. So.
Oh, no, I mean, I 85%
of the time, the seller is still saying, yes, I'm going to pay you, buyer agent, and your buyer doesn't have to worry about it. But now I have to go to my buyer and say, this seller offered me 3%. I want to let you know that, and I'm going to accept that 3% because that's my commission rate for what I do.
Right, right.
Okay?
Because the buyer isn't paying you that.
Because the buyer isn't paying me. I work mostly almost 100% with referrals. Once in a while, I'll pick up a buyer at an open house that I didn't know and build a relationship with. But I'm almost 100% referral based. But there are a lot of agents and brokers that do a lot of cold business, whether it be Zillow leads of some kind, Facebook leads, Zillow leads, cold calling. Those people are getting affected by this new ruling more than anybody.
Wow.
Because they're going to get a call from Zillow client says, I want to see 123 Main Street in an hour. And they have to say, well, wait, before I even agree to show this to you, I need to call the seller, find out if they're offering me commission, and then you're going to have to sign saying that we all know this is what they're offering me, and if they're not offering me, you're going to have to pay me kind of thing, or we're going to have to go back to the seller, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of conversation. I'm just hoping what's happening in real life and practice is that those agents are also remembering that there's a safety issue with real estate agents.
Right.
That they're not forgetting that they should never go to a vacant home with a stranger and be worrying about all this paperwork.
Right, right. Wow, talk about hot and cold. That's a lot.
So but I will tell you, there was so much concern. It was months of concern and Facebook groups.
Drama.
And in practice, I've had not an issue.
That's good. That's good.
It's communication. You have to communicate. You have to be a good communicator. Mm-hmm. You have to sell your business.
Right.
There may be agents taking clients for less than they should, but that's their business model.
Right, right. All right.
Did I just simplify that way too much?
It's still complicated. But, speaking of, the cold calling and the challenges of that, we're going to pause for a minute to hear from Frost King about weatherizing that house so that you can take good care of it before you sell it.
When it comes to weatherizing your home, whether it's the heat of the summer or the cold of the winter, your go-to is the Frost King. Frost King has been the nation's go-to resource in weatherizing your home from drafts and bugs and water infiltration for decades. My favorite product is the reusable Weather Seal. This thin product can go on any door or window. It is lightweight, it is white in color to blend into all of your door frames, and it is completely repositionable. So if you are looking for the perfect weather seal, your go-to is the Frost King.
Well, Sharon, you and I could talk about real estate and houses like for hours and hours.
No, we already have.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past.
Exactly. One of the things that I do want to talk about, which I know means a lot to both of us, is your work in the community with Laurel House. And Laurel House is also a nonprofit partner of my show for this quarter. But Laurel House is the domestic violence program in Montgomery County. Now, almost every county in the area should have one if they don't. But please tell me a little bit about Laurel House, your involvement, and BW Nice, because it's an incredible organization.
Thank you. So I do a lot of networking. I mean, that's how we've known each other for I don't know how many years. And a couple of years ago, I heard about a networking group called BW Nice. The chapter that I was familiar with because I had friends in the group was Bucks County. And I heard about it. The timing of their meetings really weren't working in my schedule. But I said, wait a minute. I do a lot of networking. I love women's networking. I love this whole program of once a month meetings and, you know, other special events. And why don't we have this in Montgomery County? So I started talking to Diane Simovich, who's the founder of the organization.
Who is an incredible woman.
Yeah.
She's just incredible.
She's incredible in a lot of different ways, many, many different ways. And eventually I signed up to be the president and start the Montgomery County chapter about 2.5 years ago. And through that, I've been familiar with Laurel House. I've been familiar with the support of Laurel House. I had not been truly informed or educated really so much about domestic violence.
Yeah.
And how broad it is.
So many of us really don't understand how pervasive it is, even in the suburban communities.
Correct. So I took it on as I want to do a do-good and I want to mix, you know, my business networking and my enjoyment of spending time with ladies, lunching with ladies, all in one place. And so I started BW Nice Montgomery County. We have a very, very, very close relationship with Laurel House. There's an advocate on each side that communicate, you know, whatever Laurel House's needs are. Once a month, we just had it, the month of October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So we had a speaker come this year, last year. We attend Laurel House events. They attend our events. We fundraise. We have a big annual event called the Red Shoe, which we raise money. We have another fabulous luncheon and we raise money.
It's so much fun. It's such a wonderful day.
I hope you continue talking about it on your show and we get even more people. This year, we're going to be doing it again in May of 2025. And I will just continue saying the most important thing to me of being involved with Laurel House is the education piece. Every time I go to an event and there's a speaker, I learn something that 90% of Americans don't know about domestic violence and don't know
because
about the community.
Because we don't talk about it. Because it is that shameful, hidden thing that is happening and people don't address it.
And it happens everywhere. And it happens, yes, mostly to women, but it also happens to men. Yeah. It's not just physical abuse. It's also emotional abuse. There have been horrific stories in Montgomery County, ones that I won't repeat, but I can tell you where to hear about them. And we could use all the help we can. We meet once a month for lunch at Panache and Bluebell. We try to have BW Nice on Ice happy hours every couple months. And again, we're going to be doing the Red Shoe again, fundraiser again in May. Last May, we raised over $6,000 for Laurel House. And believe it or not, that goes a really, really long way. I think this year I may have a goal of, you know, you're afraid to say it, but my goal is $10,000 this year.
I was going to say, you're shooting for $10,000,
aren't you? So I'm in. And our community really pulled together and we're there. And
I think we can do the 10. I think we can do it. Yeah. And it's a matter of, you know, we have small businesses mm-hmm. that donate raffle items and donate services and money and goods. It is, the money goes to such great purpose.
Sometimes I was going to say minute details.
Well, it does. And sometimes it is, it's providing housing for a woman in a hotel because they need an immediate place to go. It could be education in the community. They go in and they talk to middle school mm-hmm. kids about healthy relationships mm-hmm. and giving them examples
important.
Of what is narcissistic behavior and those red flags for young girls to realize this is this guy who's love bombing me and making me the center of his world is not healthy for me. And how do we educate young people on those things? To me, that is the it's education.
They have groups for families of victims, ACT current and recovered, you know, and survivors. So the outreach is really like top notch and so much broader than anybody. I don't even know all of it yet. And I know a good portion more than most people about the organization and what they do. And it is by county, because every domestic violence agency is connected to all the emergency services in that county.
Yes.
So if anybody was asking, like, yes, Montgomery County meets in Bluebell, and there isn't another meeting until Bucks County, and we have Delaware County now. There's Monmouth County. There's many counties in New Jersey.
Yes, for the BW Nice Groups.
For the BW Nice
yes.
Groups.
So if you are a woman entrepreneur, you don't even have to be a business person.
We have people looking, you know, midlife and
who want
business
to give back
changes.
And,
yeah.
and be a part of something. So yeah, BW Nice is really great in that it attaches itself to that local community. So you are raising mm-hmm. money. You're giving back locally and making a difference in the lives of women that are in your own backyard that you don't know are in need. And it's really powerful.
And two things so you can find us at bwnice.org. We're Montgomery County chapter. So you can find us there and all of our events. But if you know somebody in need, at laurelhouse.org, there is a button up there that you can text them, because obviously there's a lot of security and a lot of scared people either making that call or they can't take a call at work. So if you go to laurelhouse.org, there's obviously an emergency phone number and blah, but you can also text to them, which has been a huge platform for them.
Yes. And a lot of women don't understand if they want to go on to the site of their local DV shelter mm-hmm. and figure out what are services. All of these websites have an escape button. Mm-hmm. And it's a button at the top of the page that allows a woman to exit that page very quickly if their partner, perpetrator, walks into their space
or
to
even
see their computer.
Or even employer. I went to an event last month from Laurel House that was talking from the employment standpoint and the rights of the employee and, you know, blah, and the victim and all this kind of stuff. A lot of people are afraid for their employers and people that co-workers to see anything. So this is a very deep, very complex topic.
It is so ridden with shame. There is so much shame and secrecy around it. And the more those of us who are not affected can speak up for those that are, until they can have their voice, till they can find their voice, mm-hmm. it's what we need to do as women. And again, there are definitely men. It is what one out of four women and one out of seven men that will experience severe violence in a relationship. That's staggering.
It's so common. You just sit there and you're like, you just can't even believe it. It is so common that is people's, I guess, way to show their feelings.
Yeah. You know, and for those of us that are in stable, healthy relationships, you know, what a gift it is that we have We have beautiful homes mm-hmm. that we can DIY and we can tackle fun projects. There are so many people who are living without the security of just a physical space, but an emotional safe space. And whatever
can I add,
do we
have another second?
Yeah.
There are, yes. And a lot of times you'll see those people's homes in a mess, but there's also a lot on the other side of it. Don't ever believe because somebody's home looks beautiful.
Oh, right, right.
And absolutely. They drive a Range Rover yeah. and their kids are in button-up shirts that they aren't experiencing a lot at home.
Exactly. Well, as a reminder here at The Empowered Homeowner, doing it yourself doesn't mean doing it alone. And I thank you for your work in the community.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
Loved
thank
it.
You.